Contained here in this audio file is a presentation given by Noam Chomsky on a program, Masters of Mankind, on History Bookshelf. And I'll provide just brief excerpts. The full file can be downloaded also. Thank you.
I started alternative radio because of Noam Chomsky. I wrote him a letter, he wrote back, we started corresponding, then after a while I suggested we do an interview. He said yes, of course. That was 31 years ago. It's an honor for me to introduce Noam Chomsky, but how to introduce someone who, as they ritually say, needs no introduction? Well, do something different, I thought, like tell a story. There's a parable from the Sufi tradition called the elephant in the dark. Sufism, for those of you not familiar with it, is the esoteric inner dimension of Islam. Rumi and others have told this story, and I've added a bit to it. It's called the elephant in the dark. Some men, and women perhaps, who've never seen an elephant are blindfolded and are asked to touch different parts of the elephant and identify what they are touching. So one touches an ear and says, it's a fan. Another touches the tail and says confidently, it's got to be a rope. Another touches the tusk and says, well, for sure it's a spear. Another, a leg, says with great confidence, oh, it's a pillar, and on and on and on. And they start bickering among themselves, each adamantly insisting that he was right. Their voices were getting louder and louder. And then along comes a sage who tells them, guys, chill out. This is not in contemporary. I can hardly imagine in the 13th century the sage would say, guys, chill out. But it kind of modernized it a little bit. Let me remove your blindfolds. See, it's an elephant. And they were all flabbergasted. For many of us all over the world, Noam Chomsky is that sage, the Sufi guide, Murshid. Never showboating or grandstanding, but simply laying out what he sees, backed up with a torrent of facts and documentation. He doesn't tell you what to do, but like the Sufis, he teaches by example. The next step is up to you. You have to figure out your path of societal involvement and action. For decades, he's been illuminating the dark crevices of a rapacious economic system and an imperialist foreign policy, and always in a calm, soft voice. And listen for the irony. By any measure, he's led a most extraordinary life. He's a pioneer in the field of linguistics. To call his efforts tireless and his writings prolific are huge understatements. If records are kept for such categories as giving lectures and interviews, writing books and articles, Chomsky would be world champion. At 86, he's still a rebel without a pause. And as they say in Yiddish, a mensch. And yes, here comes that four-letter word, children. Cover your ears, love. He is deeply loved by many. I've seen it on the faces of people from Porto Alegre to Denver. And it's no wonder, because he's been there for so many, from East Timor to Nicaragua, from Palestine to Colombia. And this evening, he's here for us. Brothers and sisters, please welcome Noam Chomsky.
It's now 70 years since the end of the most horrific war in history. It ended with the use of an ultimate weapon which can bring human history to an end, a day which I happen to remember very well. We've been living under that shadow ever since. 20 years later, two of the leading figures of 20th century intellectual life, Bertrand Russell Albert Einstein, issued an appeal to the people of the world, calling on them to face a choice that is stark and dreadful and inescapable. Shall we put an end to the human race, or shall mankind renounce war? They recognized, of course, that war can very quickly turn into terminal nuclear war. In 1947, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists established its famous doomsday clock, setting it 7 minutes to midnight. Midnight is the end. Last January, it was advanced to 3 minutes before midnight. That's a threat level that had not been reached for 30 years at a grim moment to which I'll return. The accompanying explanation invoked the two major threats to human survival, nuclear war, nuclear weapons, and unchecked climate change. The call condemned world leaders who are endangering every person on Earth by failing to perform their most important duty, ensuring and preserving the health and vitality of human civilization. The Russell-Einstein appeal differs from the current declaration in two crucial respects. One is that it did not include the threat of environmental catastrophe, which 50 years ago was not sufficiently understood. And secondly, it directly addresses the people of the world, not the political leadership. That difference is of some significance. There's substantial evidence that on climate change, nuclear weapons planning, international policies generally, the population seems much more concerned than the political leadership, who do not regard their most important duty to be ensuring and preserving the health and vitality of human civilization, as ample evidence reveals. It's hardly a secret that even in the most free and democratic societies, governments respond only in limited ways to popular will. For the United States, it's well established in academic scholarship that a considerable majority of the population at the lower end of the income wealth scale are effectively disenfranchised. Their views are simply ignored by policymakers. Influence increases slowly as one moves up the scale, and at the very top, which means a fraction of 1%, policy is pretty much determined. That being the case, the attitudes at the top of the ladder are of very great significance. These are revealed dramatically in a poll of CEOs that was released last January at the Davos Conference in Switzerland, the Conference of Masters of the Universe, as the business press describes them. By rather ominous coincidence, this was just at the moment when the doomsday clock was advanced to 3 minutes to midnight. The poll revealed that climate change did not merit inclusion among the top 19 risks that concern CEOs. Worse still, at the top of their ranking of perceived risks was regulation. That is the prime method for addressing environmental catastrophe. Their overriding concern was with growth prospects for their companies. That's not surprising. Whatever their individual beliefs, in their institutional role, the CEOs are constrained to adopt policies that are designed to pose extraordinary and undeniable threats to the continued existence of humanity, in the words of the Doomsday Clock Declaration. And given their enormous role in determining state policy, it's less surprising that policy lags behind public opinion on the concerns that moved the clock so close to midnight.
So, I'll allow Mr. Chomsky to speak on behalf of all of us over and against the fraction of 1% to establish state policy. More to come, and you can upload the entire video of his presentation on this page. Thank you.